And again, breaking news in from the Douglas County Sheriff's Office. We have a level 3 go evacuation order in the Jack Creek fire area. That's for all recreation areas, homes, and businesses between mile marker 43 to Eagle Rock Campground. And that will include, again, all homes, businesses, and recreation areas. Level 3 evacuation order means go. If you choose not to evacuate, emergency services may not be able to assist you further. Grab your go kit and leave immediately. That is the word from the sheriff's office in the past few minutes. Sergeant Brad O'Dell putting that out. Danger to the evacuated area is current and imminent, and you should evacuate immediately. Again, that's a level 3 evacuation order in the Jack Creek fire area for all recreation areas, homes, and businesses between mile marker 43 east to Eagle Rock Campground. We'll keep you updated on News Radio 1240 KQEN and 541radio.com.
This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon. Thanks for being here. Well, the Oregon State Legislature recently adjourned, and we're getting some feedback from legislators about just how that session went. State Senator Floyd Przanski on right now. Floyd, thanks for being here this afternoon.
Carl, thank you very much.
Well, first of all, give us kind of an overall broad brushstroke evaluation of the session.
Well, I mean, it's very unique. Having the pandemic and having the COVID restrictions in place, of course, we were not able to have a quote-unquote normal session with everyone being in the building, public, the lobby, guests, and legislators and staff all being there. So that was very unique and very different. So everything was pretty much done virtually except for when we had our floor votes on bills. We had to be on the floor to vote. The House operated under one process and procedure because of the sheer number of how many they have, 60 versus what we have in 30. And so that was very unique. But I will say one of the things I would think that came out of this in a positive is that the virtual actually allowed for more Oregonians across the state to be able to participate in giving testimony in hearings than would have been normally available to people, because for our process in the past, it's always been people needed to show up to give testimony live, or you had to submit it in writing. This time, you were able to be either at your home or somewhere in your local community to be able to tag into the virtual setting and be able to give testimony that way. So one of the things I hope that we will move forward in the future is the ability and accessibility for individual Oregonians to be able to participate at the legislature without needing to travel all the way to Salem from wherever they may live to give testimony for a few minutes as compared to being able to do it in their own local community or at home.
Do you feel like this is one of those times where aspects of this pandemic and technology may have changed things for the long term?
Absolutely. I really think it has. There's been a push on many of our parts to try to set up, I'm going to call them hubs. We're looking at one time in the past at using community colleges that had the type of technology to allow for individuals who live near those facilities to be able to go there to give testimony remotely. And this has taken it exponentially much further. And I've heard from a number of people. I mean, I personally would like to have the doors open and allow everyone to come in and be part of that process, because I really think it gives a lot of perspective for individuals to be actually in the Capitol for testimony, as well as just being part of that that environment of the political process. But I clearly believe and think that this has shown and demonstrated that we can, in fact, allow more Oregonians to participate in their state government virtually than they could individually coming to Salem.
Over the years, I've talked to folks from lots of different interest groups on both sides of the aisle who talk about going from Roseburg, doing the three-hour drive to Salem, waiting around for a couple hours, and literally talking for 5 minutes and then turning around and coming back.
That's correct. And that's one of those situations, of course, I mean, for those who want to come up and have that experience, I think it should always be open and allowed for that to occur. But clearly, in this day and time, for someone to have to travel, as you said, 3 hours, and then in some cases even being limited as to how much time you can testify, 3 to 5 minutes, and then basically be done, and then it's kind of like, well, what do I do next? You know, if you haven't been to the Capitol, you know, that's one of those things where you can really take in the tours and all that. But for many people, they want to be able to express themselves on individual pieces of the legislation, maybe more than one in a session. And this would, in fact, and does, in fact, allow for individuals to be able to do that from the convenience of their home.
And for 3 hours being the distance from Roseburg, I mean, that's half that what some of the folks, you know, Lakeview or far eastern Oregon, Ontario, places like that are looking at 6 hours each way.
That's correct. And that's one of the things that I've, again, I'm very pleased with how this came about in the sense of with the technology. Clearly, with anything, it's a learning process. We want to get better. But for the most part, we were able to go with the flow. Where we had technical difficulties, our staff monitoring, saying the recording's off, we'd stop. We'd make certain we got the O's and the X's, all the binary stuff together, and basically we're able to then continue. So yeah, no, it's a learning experience and process, but for most of the people I've spoken to, they've enjoyed having that opportunity to really be part of the process without necessarily being in Salem for that.
All that being said, though, I understand we do have a date now for the Capitol to be reopened to the public. Is that correct?
Well, there is going to be another opening, yes. Now, I hesitate because there's two parts to that question. One, I'm not sure what the date is for when they're going to open up the main portion of the building. Realize that the Senate wing and the House wing, where the offices are for the representatives and senators, those are still closed, and they will stay closed until next year. And the reason for that is there's additional seismic upgrades that need to be done. We have had some of this work being done during the session, but now the 9th, so today, so I guess the 9th is the end of this week, right? So we have until the 9th to be out of our offices. And on the 10th, they will be basically sealed off, and no one will be able to get into the wings. Now, the rest of the building, which is the Capitol itself and the chambers for the House and Senate, they will be reopened, from my understanding. I have not heard the date as to when they're going to reopen, but it will be one just kind of like in the summer hours where individuals will be able to come up and do some touring. I don't know how limited it will be because of the construction. But also the some of the main foyer areas are also going to be limited access because they have to get up underneath those structures and to do the fortification for the seismic upgrades.
Talk about legislation that passed during this session that you're particularly happy about.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of things that I think happened that was, I think, very important. The one that I think is probably game-changing for the state of Oregon was Senate Bill 762, and this is the wildfire suppression and really mobilizing the communities to be able to have a line of defense from wildfires and grass fires getting away from people and impacting their homes and their communities. That particular piece of legislation was kind of off and on again. As you can imagine, a lot of individuals have raised some concerns as to what this really means for private ownership on lands. And clearly what we're trying to do is ensure that individuals that have taken the steps to have some type of distance from combustibles around their houses, that they are, in fact, probably less likely to be impacted with a fire that would destroy their structures. With the four major fires we had last September, I think a lot of people are now understanding the need and purpose for having these type of preventions in place, and ones that really are not going to let's say, take away your quality of your life. In fact, I think it will instill it because it's going to give you better opportunities to see something that you've worked for many years and put a lot of money and investment time into, still being able to stand and not get consumed by a wildfire.
With the impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic, a lot of federal funds came in. Do you feel like that money was delved out wisely?
You know, it's one of those things that it's hard to say how wisely was it. I think it was pretty wise in the sense of we were integrating, we're trying to get the money into locations and the individuals that could actually and needed to have those type of fortifications while they were not able to work in their normal sense. So a lot of the aid and care money that was coming in from the feds, I do believe was necessary and appropriate because it really got money to the individuals as compared to doing it from the top down through some type of corporate filtering of seeing money being dispersed through that process. There is still a lot to be addressed, you know, with the housing issues, landlords, tenants. So there's still a lot of, I think, unanswered questions for many people about how this is going to really play out as to being able to recover a lot of financial losses that have been incurred at this point. And that's where I think a lot of the federal money that did come in has been able to help offset and ensure businesses stay open as well as individuals have their ability to make ends meet. As you can imagine, Kyle, many people in their lives will actually plan out their retirement where they may have one or two rentals that will help them have a steady income when they go fixed income and through retirement perspectives. And so I think those are things that are important for us to keep in mind, that we need to ensure that the money that we have allocated is, in fact, being used in the sense with the impact that we want. And at the same time, being willing to see maybe alternatives, and hopefully the federal government will continue to offset many losses throughout the country, including a lot of losses here in Oregon that have been incurred by many individuals and businesses.
Going to take a break on Inside Douglas County. More when we come back with State Senator Floyd Przanski. A reminder, Level 3 go evacuation order issued for the Jack Creek Fire for all recreation areas, homes, and businesses between mile marker 43 east to Eagle Rock Campground. That is about 3 miles east of the Dry Creek store. A Level 3 go now evacuation order issued by the Douglas County Sheriff's Office. 1248 at News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1249. Lars Larson on the way at 1. Tomorrow, State Representative Gary Leaf will give his review of the legislative session on Inside Douglas County. State Senator Floyd Przanski with us now. You chair the Judiciary Committee in the Senate. What about legislation there that maybe passed or didn't pass you were particularly interested in?
Well, Kyle, there's a lot of things that, of course, judiciary takes on. And I'll kind of focus on some of the stuff because of what's happened this last year regarding police conduct and trying to have some type of, clarity as to what they can or can't do and what they should or shouldn't be doing, and trying to ensure that we have individuals having the right to carry out and their civil request and approach and redress to the government, and at the same time ensuring that we have means of dealing with individuals who are not necessarily playing fair, who are actually causing harm and damage to people and property. So we had a number of pieces of legislation that came through that are in fact dealing with modifying police conduct in the sense of what they can or can't do. Now, I will be very frank with you. I was very concerned with one of the bills that was coming through the process, never made it to the Senate per se, but it was, in fact, one that basically would have caused, I think, a lot of concern and inability for individuals to be able to, really go into the profession of law enforcement knowing that they were under more of what I'm calling a microscope that shouldn't be as such. I'm very interested in ensuring that we do, in fact, have individuals held accountable for the conduct that they do, whether it is a citizen or an officer who's acting outside of the law. And we want to make certain that individuals have the ability to assemble, to have redress. And so there's a fine line of mixing. So we had, like I said, a number of bills. I don't have time to go through each and every one of them. But we had law enforcement working with us in trying to ensure that we had a balance in the approach that we took. And I was very pleased with how that came out in the sense of having the chiefs of police as well as the Sheriff's Association working with the House. These bills started actually on the House side and then came over to the Senate based on work that had been done during the interim. Some of the stuff that we're looking at ensuring is that officers have uniforms that do, in fact, identify them as to what law enforcement agency they're with, having some type of unique identifier, either by number or by name, so individuals can be identified, and you can, in fact, ensure that there's some accountability for conduct that may be above the law. The other areas I think that we've really focused in on is how an individual interferes with a police officer. There's some reforms in that scenario, and ensuring that a person does in fact have the right to have redress. We hear a lot about the protest and actions that occurred up in Portland this last year. Clearly, individuals do, in fact, have the right to go out and protest, and that they should, as long as they're not causing physical damage or causing injury to others, they should not be forced to leave their location so long as they're not causing a civil, as long as they're not breaking the law, they should be able to protest. And so we're giving some clarity as to what is interfering with a police officer, as to what isn't, modifying what a lawful order is or isn't. And so we can, in fact, give a little bit more perspective to ensure that people have that balance to be able to protest if they want to, and at the same time be held accountable if they break the law.
What about the state education budget? That one is a particular, large spending area. Were you happy with how that came out?
Overall, yes. I mean, clearly we've got more money because of the influx of coming in from the feds and being able to, really budget much broader than we anticipated. The forecast that came through and what the forecast show for the next two bienniums is that we are in a growth and we are able to put more money into schools, which we clearly need to be able to do to ensure that we have enough teachers, staff, and accommodations for youth to be able to actually have a education forum to be able to learn. So I'm very pleased with the money that at this point. I've not seen all of the breakouts as to the amounts. I know that there's this one game-upmanship as to between the parties. Well, we'd like to put another $300 million in. Oh, you didn't want to put in that. You know, we put in record numbers this year. And one of the things that we have to keep in mind, even though we look very flush on paper, we have an obligation, I think, a true duty to not overspend and allocate so much out that we're not able to maintain it going into the future. And that's one of the things that was being worked on by the Ways and Means members, is to ensure that we could, in fact, spend where we wanted to, such as in the education budget, but at the same time stay within the parameter of having enough reserve funds for a downturn in the economy.
Now, do we anticipate a special session later?
We do. There's definitely will be one, at least at this point. There's got to be one in September, and the reason for that is because of the redistricting that's currently going on with the census being done last year. This year is the year that all states redraw their lines for their political state and federal lines for districts. And so we got a waiver We have an exception, however you might want to say it, that the Oregon Supreme Court stated that the legislature shall have the right to attempt to create these boundaries through redistricting, and they gave us an expedited timeline after the deadline of when we were supposed to do it, which was during the summer. And so we have to have all this work done before the end of September. And so I believe we're now scheduled tentatively to have a legislative session. I believe it's the third Monday of September is when it would start. And the purpose of that one, it will be to adopt any redistricting that we come up as a state.
All right, lots more to cover. We'll do it again in the near future. State Senator Floyd Przanski, thanks for being on.
Kyle, thank you. Sorry we ran out of time.
1257, News Radio 1240, KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team, News Radio 1240 KQEN.